Hello, Steve. Good to see you. How are things going?
Good morning, Lance. They are going well, dealing with people all over the country, talking about their contracts. Life's a dream. What about yourself?
Oh yeah, it's been a busy week over here too. Lots of transactions on the desk right now. So, got some really fun stuff going on. I think that's going to be a good subject to talk about.
Yeah, especially, considering that how often practices are changing hands these days, it's definitely a current topic that we should kind of go over here.
Yeah. And as I kind of reflect on what I enjoy to do, I really enjoy these business transactions. I mean, that's actually why I went to law school. I went to law school for the sole purpose to be a transactional attorney. And all of my training and, really all of my experiences, leads up to that. And so, I as I sit and think about these, and we got, like I said, we've got two or three really, really big ones and really, really monumental transactions on our desk. We just finished a couple, as well. As I think about these, I think about the, basically the massive difference that these make in a veterinarian's life, whether they're buying a practice or selling a practice. I mean, it's like you are stepping into a position that's out of associateship up to an ownership position, or you're selling, and entering into the retirement phase of your life, or basically a new chapter, in your life. And so, like, these are monumental, huge months and weeks, in that veterinarian's life as their entire retirement, lays out in front of them, as their entire the rest of their career, lays out in front of them. We're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, that are on the line. I mean, I really like these. I like the pressure. I like the really visiting with a veterinarian about, what's going on in their life, what are their future plans, and all of that. So it's just there's quite a few of them right now, and I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is a life-changing event in many directions for the former owner, for the buyers, for everybody involved. And just like any time you're dealing with a multitude of people that may have differing ideas, there's a lot of management of that and kind of managing expectations and kind of setting the groundwork so that everything comes out well.
I mean, I kind of break this down in my head like a couple of different ways. And so, one, I think about, do we have a veterinarian that's buying a practice from another veterinarian, or a veterinarian that's selling a practice to another veterinarian? I kind of think of those as veterinarian to veterinarian transactions. And so, kind of a, it's a collegial, it's a professional, it's everybody's working in the same direction. Now, the parties are, adverse. We've got buyer and seller. It's just natural that the buyer always wants to pay less and the seller always wants to receive more. I mean, it's just the, that's just the nature of the way it works. Doesn't make them bad people. It's just that's the way, that it is. But having said that, it's hey, everybody's pulling in the same direction for the clients, for the team members, and all of that stuff. And and I kind of treat those differently than what I consider the veterinarian to corporate transaction, the veterinarian to private equity backed, transaction. There, we've got to bring our A game. I mean, it's, the lawyers on the other side that are representing the corporate, entity, or the private equity firm, whatever the situation is. I mean, they do this all day, every day, for a living. And, and they are top-notch lawyers. And so I really enjoy kind of the, I'm going to use the word competitiveness, really the competitiveness and hey, making sure that your client gets the best possible deal, and it's a, I mean, it's one of those things. It's a highly nuanced transaction. It's a highly, highly detailed, and that's kind of how I break it down, in my mind overall. Is, are we dealing veterinarian to veterinarian? Are we dealing veterinarian to, to corporate group?
Yeah, definitely a big difference there. Now, as far as yourself goes, you're practicing veterinarian, you're an attorney, but you've owned practices, you've sold practice, you've been through this process. And kind of can you speak to kind of how you saw it from your perspective, being in the thick of it, not as the rep person representing, but as the seller, as the buyer?
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy this type of work, because I feel like it kind of brings all the experience throughout my career, together. And so, yeah, I mean, basically my entire career in veterinary medicine, 13 months out of veterinary school, I was buying my first veterinary practice, as the client, right? Working with a veterinary specific lawyer, and then owned that practice for a number of years, sold that practice with the same lawyer, so I was I was being represented in those in that deal, ultimately to go on to law school and become a transactional attorney. And then in the meantime or afterwards, I ended up buying a bunch of practices. Some of them, I did the deals myself. I'm both the buyer and the lawyer on that. Other times I used, outside counsel, to help me buy those practices and manage those practices. Ultimately, when I went to sell my practices and there was a corporate buyer involved on some of them, I used, outside counsel. So I've got it. I see it from multiple different, directions, but being the veterinarian that's in the shoes of the client, really doesn't, there's really no substitute, for that experience, overall. And as a, as a lawyer, as an attorney that does this now, it's kind of like I get to tie together both the legal side and my experience as a veterinarian and a practice owner, really. So I feel like I can provide more of a, more of a consultation, more of a holistic approach, to the transaction, financial analysis, economic, and then obviously talk about, the soft stuff, the schedules and the team and the transaction and the transition, of team members, the transition of clients as you're standing in the exam room. All of that comes into play in this, not just this, hey, there's this hard cut, just the legal side. Obviously, the legal side is super important, but there's all these other components that come in to make that transition, that transaction, successful. So it's kind of like the, I consider it kind of like the pinnacle of what, what I can do and how I can help veterinarians. And that's why we're both here, right? Is, our 100% goal is to help, help veterinarians, in their careers so they can turn and serve people.
Yeah, it's just so interesting to hear that perspective where, and I'm sure that the clients that we work with are very, very much happy to get that soft skills portion of
Yeah.
it. They're not going to be getting from most transactional attorneys, unfortunately. And
Yeah.
they were able to kind of really drill down on like their wellness and because a lot of them, they care a lot about their staff and they want to make sure they're treated appropriately and that things don't change, but also recognize that like they're selling this for a reason and they're going to have to let go a bit.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most, not only surprising, but really the both most, kind of all awe-inspiring moments, in doing this is, when a person is selling their veterinary practice, there's, I mean, they cry on the phone and on Zoom calls. I mean, it represents a major change in their life. And they're thinking about all their clients over the years, and their clients' children, and the number of pets that they've served, over the years, the number of farms or ranches that they serve. I mean, I've seen, grown men, as they say, cry, thinking about letting go of that clientele or letting go of that staff, and there's a number of things that come in, with that. And so, yeah, there's definitely like the psychological component, the emotional component of this as well. And in fact, when I'm working with sellers, I often, and buyers for that matter as well, I'll often warn them of, being emotionally sold, that letting the emotions kind of control things. And that's really where, a good experienced attorney, they teach us this in school, a really experienced attorney, provides a buffer, in a sounding board for those emotions to make sure that emotions aren't ruling the day, that we have logical and reasonable thought that's ruling the day.
Yeah, they're always going to be a part of it. The emotions are always going to be a part of it. But, learning to set them aside at times and let them have free rein when they deserve it, but also
Yeah.
they do need to be set aside when we're dealing with the nuts and bolts of a transaction.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally millions of dollars at stake here, and so these are very emotional times. And so, when that period of time in your life, like I said, I've been there, done that. I know what that feels like, And so, I take that part of my job, really seriously, and really hope that I can help people through that. That's why they call lawyers counselors, right? And so it's more than just, being an attorney. It's, it's counsel as well, and that's a really cool part of my job. It's probably it probably is the most favorite part of my job. It is the thing that I really look forward to.
Nice. Yeah. And now, so to pivot a little, if a practice owner calls you and says, "Hey, I want to sell my practice. I don't have any buyers yet, but I want to sell. I'm getting ready to retire. What do I need to do to get myself ready?"
Well, 100% kudos to that, that practice owner to look, years down the road, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, to start preparing the finances for the practice, prepare the procedures and protocols. Little stuff, Steve, like, we've got diagnostic laboratory agreements that, that really will impact the sales price, and so, and, supply, commitment supply agreements where, we need some time to kind of clean those things up, leases on equipment, making sure that that little stuff is, it's little stuff, but, when a seller, when a seller carries that into the transaction, the buyer has to assume those things. That has some major impacts on sales price. And so those sellers that come to me and say, "Hey, I'm looking 2, 3, 4 years down the road," and that gives us time to get all of those kind of ducks in a row financially, and then also procedures and protocols, getting, all the little stuff, all of the contracts with employees and associates, and, all of the things that make that transaction go smoothly. Oh my gosh, it makes my job so much easier. On the other end, we come into the situation where, probably the worst case scenario is we come in a situation and the LOI is already signed, and so we are basically working with a set of cards that we've been dealt, and some of those cards have already been played, and that makes further negotiation quite a bit different. So the prime time is to look 2 and 3 years down the road, more if possible, to kind of prepare the practice for sale. At the very least, you want to get a lawyer involved. Somebody that's experienced in negotiating these things before signing the LOI. We want to really spend a lot of time negotiating and working through the LOI as long as possible. And that sets up what we call the definitive document stage, where we're going to the asset purchase agreement or the stock purchase agreement, or whatever else. It makes going that second phase so much easier if the heavy lifting on the negotiation is done ahead of time. It's not the end of the world if somebody calls, after the LOI is signed, but it does kind of put us behind the eight ball.
Yeah, we got, preparation is key. And yeah, if think about it this way, like let's say you're not running your business exactly appropriately. You might have, some personal credit card expenses you're running through the practice, or your car insurance is running through the practice, or maybe even a vehicle itself. With enough advance notice, you can straighten that up. With no advance notice, then we're kind of scrambling a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Steve. And so, many times corporate practices will say, "Hey, let's just make an offer on your practice. Let's just see your financials, and we'll throw an offer out there." You want that first pass of financials to be clean. We don't want a bunch of personal expenses that are hidden in there, And so, you want to have a clean set of financials ready to go upon sending that over. If what we would call dirty financials or muddled financials, are sent over, then we've got some explaining to do. We got to go through in detail, say, "No, let's add this back in. Let's add this back in, to the financials of the practice. This was a personal expense. This shouldn't have run through the practice finances." And we kind of have to explain that away. It's easier if we just don't have to, we don't have to explain. If we explain that from the get-go and say, "Hey, so everybody's on the same page. This is what I'm happening." But anytime we're dealing with a private practice owner, it's very common to have, expenses that aren't truly 100% tied to the practice, in the financials.
I've got everything cleaned up. I've got the financials in order. I'm putting the practice up. I've got a two buyers coming in. I've got a corporate buyer, and I've got just an associate buyer. What do I do?
Yeah,
How
see.
am I evaluating these things?
Yeah. So number one, I'm a huge, huge advocate of independent practice ownership. I really love seeing veterinarians get into a practice ownership role or even a practice partnership role. I mean, I feel that's the best way for our profession. That's the best way for our clients. And it's certainly the best move financially for those practice owners. So huge advocate of independent practice ownership. And so if I'm looking at a deal, so usually there's a term sheet or an LOI that's coming from a corporate, and then there's a group of or one or two practice associates that want to buy the practice, I mean, to me, it comes down to a financial decision. All right, what does it look like if we sell to corporate? You know, what are the implications that are coming down the road? What type of long-term partnership agreement? Maybe that partnership agreement lasts for 4, 5, 6, 8 years. Where the selling veterinarian is now a minority partner in their own practice. You know, and so okay, what are potential profits and distributions that are coming, you know, through that time? What's the second sell of that 15, 20, 30%, you know, look like? Okay, total all this up so we can lay that out. Okay, now what's it look like from a pure math and financial perspective if we sold to these independent or these practicing veterinarians? What happens if we sell 20%? What happens if we sell 30%? What happens if we sell up to 49%, you know, and leave the selling veterinarian in control and basically do the math and what's it look like over 10 years? Obviously, there's a number of factors that are at play here. You know, what's the financial strength of the buying veterinarians? What's the offer from corporate? What are the details of, you know, restrictive covenants? I like to do is really lay the facts out, you know, from my financial perspective, which is this is not a legal thing, right, at all. This is purely a practice management and financial decision. Okay, lay the facts out and look at, hey, what does this look like? And many times those private practice associates can actually get pretty close to that number. It's just a lot of times that LOI or that term sheet comes in and the number on it is just so big. It's like, oh my gosh, there's no way that anybody can get close. That's a knee-jerk, gut-based, you know, emotional reaction. Okay, let's take a step back and look at the math and look at the, you know, the logical and rational flow, and let's make a decision from there. And I've seen, and here's the deal. This is what's cool is I've seen veterinarians make the decision that go both ways. You know, where, you know, okay, at least they're making an educated decision, you know, and a data-driven decision, not just a gut decision that, you know, this corporate offer is the best and the only way, you know, for me to retire.
Yeah, because I do feel like a lot of practice owners that are wanting to sell struggle with that decision because they see that big gaudy number come in and they're like, well, no one's ever going to be able to. I'd love to sell to an associate or a partner or a group of associates, but there's no way they're ever going to, match this offer. And sometimes you got to dig into the details. Maybe they can,
Well, the thing that people forget, you know, when they talk about that big number that they sold their practice for, you know, the details that they leave out, you know, are what are the strings attached? You know, what's the earnout look like? How much a component of that? You know, what's this joint venture look like? You know, okay, I've got these distributions that may or may not be coming. You know, I've got this, you know, the second sell that may or may not be coming, you know, and you know, we've got to really use some, you know, use some assumptions and some presumptions to, you know, to figure out, okay, what's the financial picture look like 4 or 5 years down the road? None of the corporate transactions that I'm seeing right now, Steve, are just purely a cash transaction. That just really doesn't happen anymore. You know, where it's like, hey, you get your money and you walk away. No, they don't do that. There's strings attached and there's lock, you know, there's ways to lock the selling veterinarian in.
And then for that selling veterinarian, now they've sold this thing that they've built up, ground up, and now they're the medical director that's got to stay there for 5, 6 years without any say that they used to have. And that's a tough transition to make.
I can tell you it's tough for me. You know, it was tough for me for being, you know, the person that was in control to the person that was in the back seat. And I thought it'd be easier for me, but it was hard for me to take a back seat decisions on, you know, back seat to decisions that are being made for what I considered, you know, my practices. I mean, I didn't expect that, you know, to come, but that's the truth as I reflect back on my transaction.
Yeah, and I bet a lot of sellers are thinking the same way. And now they're in, and then they get into the reality of the situation where they're stuck working there 5 years. They're no longer the boss. And things come up that back in the day they would have handled on their own. And now they can't.
It's a tough spot to be in. I mean, it's some of my sellers say, you know, it's kind of like doing time. All right, I'm waiting the clock out, you know, which is not a fun place to be. in life. And so, but here's the deal, Steve, is like we can put stuff in the paperwork and we can negotiate for things that make that post-sell time easier. We can put some things in place to make it, give some more control. We can definitely do some things that make the financial impacts, more limited. So this is one of these worlds where all of these transactions are super, super different. They're highly, highly detailed. A lot of everybody's life is different. Everybody's practice is different, right? So like there's no one size fits all cookie cutter approach, and so depending on where that person is in life, depending on what their associates are like, depending what their practice manager's like, depending on who's buying them, all of that stuff, comes into play, and it's really making some game time decisions on how, what's the best way to handle these things. And so that's the cool part to me is it's you're kind of getting down into the details of someone's life and their retirement and what's it look like, and and really hopefully providing some good sound counsel and guidance.
Yeah, and a big part of it, what I see too is like they all want to, they're trying to make sure their associates and their staff are taken care of. And I feel like that's probably a lot easier if you're partnering with an associate that's already there or multiple associates that's already there.
Yeah, it's more controllable, for sure. At one point in time, we could really say that the corporate private equity groups, provided better benefits. And I would say that over the last 10 years, they've brought better benefits to the veterinary employment market. So we would tell staff members, yeah, this is a good deal for you because you're going to get better benefits. But actually at this point, Steve, what we're seeing is the associates and the technicians and the assistants and the CSRs, they're actually taking less benefits going to corporate, so we have to kind of explain that away, which obviously gets to be a problem. And so, having more control over, what it looks like for your team becomes super important, and that's a major factor for me. We talk a lot about money and we talk a lot about retirement. We talk about, financial matters. But we can't ever forget that there's real people involved, that work in these practices, their entire career is in this practice. There's clients that depend on this practice. Those are decisions and those are things that are not forgotten, and they actually weigh quite heavily.
Yeah, and I'm sure for the staff, they're going to see pitfalls in any transaction because they're used to what they're used to. They're used to, Dr. Smith owning the practice, he does it this way. So whether he's selling it to a corporate or to Dr. Jones that's also worked in the practice, things might change. Things are going to change. Things are definitely going to change if they're selling to corporate. But even if Dr. Jones buys in, he's going to have some say now, and things might change a little bit.
So I mean, actually, when you go through law school and you go through the transactional training, and as you watch this unfold, and I read and obviously take continuing legal education on things like this, that's all called transitional risk. And that transitional and transactional risk are a big deal. And here's the deal is people, whether it's staff members, associates, technicians, whatever the situation, and clients, they always have a fear of the unknown. So we know what it's like right now, right? But what's it look like on the other side of this deal? What's it look like with Dr. Jones? Is she gonna run the practice the same way? What's it look like with this corporate? There's this fear of what corporates get a bad name, maybe rightfully so, right? And so staff members, have a real fear. They've heard from their colleagues and friends that work for corporate practices, okay, this is what it's gonna be like. So, really talking through and calming down that fear of the unknown is super important. And I see some sellers that are super transparent. They say, hey, this is what's happening. This is how it's going to happen. This is, I've thought through this. This is in everybody's best interest. And then I see others that are very secretive, and obviously being secretive creates, some a worse fear of the unknown and then possibly even some mistrust issues as well. So these are all things that we have to think through other than just, here's the raw money stuff, here's the raw legal stuff, and here's the at the end of the day, like whether it's a, hey, we're selling to a partner, we're bringing on an associate, or we're selling to a corporate, these aren't just mere transactions, right? This is actually delves over into the world of a relationship-based negotiation, right? A transactional negotiation is just when, hey, I want to buy this vehicle. I'm going to give that person the cash. They're going to give me the vehicle. We never talk to each other again, right? That's a transactional negotiation. Now we're talking about a relationship-based negotiation. It used to be where veterinarians would transact their practices and they would ride off in the sunset. New buyer comes on, runs the practice, maybe they talk to each other for a couple of months and then that's that, right? That doesn't really happen anymore, And so now it's really, let's build the relationship. Let's negotiate like we're going to have a long-term relationship. Let's be fully transparent. Let's talk all these things through so the relationship doesn't fall apart in 2 months, 6 months, 8 months, down the road, because that's where the big money's at stake, right? Like we've got this partnership that we're supposed to be working together on. We've got this earnout, in the corporate practice that we need to hit. We need all of our staff members and our associates to be there to hit that earnout. We've got this 30% stake with this corporate practice where, if the practice falls apart, we don't get 30% of our money. There's a lot of long-term relationship situations and issues, that we need to work through and take care of for the holistic long-term approach.
Riding off into the sunset is a thing of the past. We haven't we're just not seeing that. We're seeing you're here for X number of years. Here's your non-compete. Here's and we don't want you leaving and starting another practice. You're gonna
Yeah,
be
well. Yeah, not leaving and starting out of practice, but not even actually even being able to retire either. Hey, you can, you're locked in with a 3 to 5 year employment agreement that it's for term, or hey, you can leave, but you have several hundred thousands, if not millions of dollars tied up in this practice. No sane person, would walk away, from that unless the situation was really, really bad. So the money locks them in, the legal stuff locks them in, the non-compete, as you're talking about, Steve, locks them in, and that's, they're really tied to the practice on multiple different levels, all of which can be negotiated from a legal standpoint, right? And so it's really looking 2 and 3 and 4 years down the road and say, how's this going to play out? It's not just this thing that's in front of us right now, this transaction. But how does this impact us 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road? And what's that look like when that person truly does want to step away or truly does want to retire?
And when I, and now the my brain's turning because I deal with a lot of the non-competes and everything as well, see a lot of them. What if I'm selling a practice in a state without a non-compete? Are they able to wrap me up in one because of the sale?
Yeah, see, this is where the seller of a practice's non-compete looks totally different than an employee's non-compete. Very common misconception, very common myth. And so, sellers of practices kind of have this in their mind. Well, non-competes are hard to enforce. They forget the phrase against employees. And so yeah, they're harder to enforce against employees, because that person's just there working and receiving wages. The seller of the practice is receiving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to step away from the practice. They're receiving what the law calls consideration. They got a chunk of change basically just to leave and not compete with this thing that they sold. The courts will look at that totally differently than an employment relationship. And so, yeah, sellers of practices have to, and this is a common explanation that I have to make is as a seller of the practice, this non-compete's going to be much longer, much broader, much bigger radius, much more inclusive, and it's going to be much more enforceable in essentially every state.
Yeah, it's a totally different scenario than just the employee working at the practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an interesting situation. I mean, we see what about things like, the owner is going to, wants to make sure the associates that they're, he's say let's say he's selling, he wants to make sure everybody stays on board, keeps them happy. I've heard of like the owner financing additional bonuses out of their end to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, Steve, this is where one of those things where you want an attorney that's, experienced or even a broker that's experienced, with veterinary practice transactions to really understand in the LOI phase, we actually need to negotiate those bonuses in for the associates. And we need to set aside some money that helps the associates sign their contracts. You know, it pr basically provides a thank you for them. Hey, thank you for being there as an associate. Thank you for, you know, staying on as associate. Thank you for signing this contract. You know, but that needs to be negotiated ahead of time, in front of everything. You know, if it's the night, if it's the 11th hour, you know, and now we're trying to coerce these associates to sign their contract, it's a highly stressful situation, you know. And then at that point, it's like, well, corporate doesn't really want to pay anymore, you know, employer, you know, seller doesn't really want to dip into their pocket, you know, anymore. And so it's, you know, this should have been thought about essentially weeks ago, you know, is the thing. And unfortunately, you know, we run into that exact scenario, Steve, what, on a
Oh.
monthly basis, you know. And so it's a it creates a really high stress, high problem, you know, time. And so it really needs to be thought through on the, ahead of time.
And that's the point where now everybody is stressed out. The buyer is stressed out because the owner is not getting the associates on board. The owner is being pulled in two directions at once. They want to keep the sale moving forward. But they clearly also want to keep the associates happy and on board because what do you have if you don't have any associates?
Yeah.
And the associates are kind of just frazzled with this big change is coming down the pike. And now I've got what they're saying is days to make decisions.
Yeah, they've got corporate breathing down their neck. They've got you know, they've got practice owner, you know, anxious, nervous, you know, breathing down their neck. They're not in a good place, you know, overall. And sometimes they're the ones that wanted to buy the practice too. You know, so that creates another level of, you know, of complexity, you know, there. So yeah, it's all about, you know, setting this up for success, you know, early in the process. And so when we're actually getting to the closing and the definitive documents, you know, hey, everything's been done. The hard work, the heavy lifting's been done. You know, we just have to, you know, basically memorialize everything. You know, and that makes my job so much easier.
Yeah, this is the topic that I'm very interested in because I kind of really like to see, you're dealing with the nuts and the bolts of the paperwork. I mean, the human interactions that happen during these things, are so interesting to see. And I absolutely agree that like the earlier that everybody can be prepared, the easier this is going to go for everybody, for everybody. Any other thoughts, Lance, on that?
Yeah, Steve, we're gonna have to have a whole nother conversation about buying a practice. You know, we really just talked about, you know, selling a practice and what that looks like. I know we focused on corporate, you know, quite a bit, which is, you know, which is okay because that's a very common situation. But, you know, we're really gonna have to circle back and talk about, you know, what it looks like to sell the practice to a group of associates or basically bring on, you know, a partnership, you know, joint have some have a associate or multiple associates join as partners. And then
Yeah.
we're also going to have to talk about what it looks like to buy a practice, you know, as a veterinarian, both of which are, you know, those two things really, you know, I really feel strongly about that. That's probably one of the better things for the profession. And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions and, you know, just honestly lack of knowledge out there. So yeah, we're gonna have to come back and have a different episodes on those two things.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds like we've got a couple more episodes lined up.
Yeah, always something to talk about, Steve.
Always, always. Well, hey everybody, I think that just about does it for us here today. I'm Steve Kellner. There's Lance Rosa over there. Any final words, Lance?
Oh, great to see everyone here, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
All right, we'll see you next time, everybody.